It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at jwright929ESPN. As always, you can listen live on the radio dial, 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But you can always stay up to date with everything happening here at the station right here on the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. Stream live anytime, anywhere. You can also listen on demand. George Roger is the producer of the program. Glad that he is with us. You can follow him on Twitter, on X, at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good day to you. Long day, I guess, for me in the booth.
Bang, bang. There you go.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Starting out hot, I guess.
My company, as he was yesterday, but usually joins me every Tuesday, every Friday, the host of VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast, College Basketball Betting Podcast, VSiN's Betting Tailgate Shows, airing on weekends. Check your local listings, 9 a.m. Central Time for us, VSiN Primetime. Download the Watch VSiN app on Twitter, on X, at one Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
How's it going? Yeah, you just you do your thing, man. I'm going to sit back and fill out my timesheet here.
Yeah. We'll do that. Of course, we'll talk about the fine that the NBA handed down today for Ja Morant. $75,000 for continuing to do his finger guns. I think it's really more of like a finger shotgun. I don't know. We'll get into that. Also, we've got the Final Four. It's finally here. I think, Tim, let's ponder this question. Is this the most anticipated Final Four?
Since when?
I'm going to say
ever.
Ever, because I think my feeling about it is I think it should be the most anticipated Final Four ever, but I don't feel like it feels that way. And I don't know if that's because the tournament has largely been chalky and to script. But I feel like this should be similar. Remember when we had Baylor and Gonzaga and the weird COVID-ish?
Yep, 21.
And that one.
Also, that was the last time Houston was a 5-point underdog.
Well, but like also, it's like it felt like everything was building to that. And I felt like the hype around that one was bigger. I don't know. Like, I feel like this one should be like these have clearly been the four best teams all year. And they're here, and they're about to go to battle, and it just doesn't quite feel like that. Maybe by game time tomorrow, I'll feel differently, but I don't know. I just, I feel like this should have a bigger atmosphere around it. So we'll get into a couple of things there. Also, Blake Topmeyer going to join us as he does each and every Friday on the program. We'll talk about his thoughts on Ole Miss keeping Chris Beard. What's Texas A&M going to do? Get his thoughts on the Final Four and more. We'll get into the list. Colorado's had its pro day. We've also had more figures about the amount of money that conferences are going to have next year. I want to discuss that with Tim. We'll get into our cards. We'll tell your story, and then we'll get it out of here. All right, Tim. So the Ja Morant finger gun story continues. And I actually do want to get your perspective from the outside looking in, because I do think it's helpful at times, like when you're caught up in it, you can realize like what is the outside world looking at? And I do think you offer that perspective because you're aware enough, but you're not in it every single day. And I think sometimes when you can be involved with it every single day, you can kind of have blinders on it. So I think the way I'd lay it out is the Warriors and the Grizzlies have another dust up. Buddy Hield instigates Ja Morant into the finger guns using his own celebration against him. The NBA warns both Buddy Hield and Ja Morant, basically saying, don't do it again. I did not watch every second of Warriors-Lakers. What I can tell you is there were plenty of Warriors last night that did do finger guns. I don't recall exactly if Buddy Hield did. I saw people on social media say that he did. I've not seen video of it. And while I saw a large portion of the game, I was not locked in to every single second of that game. So I don't want to say something that could be factually untrue. I know what is factually true is multiple Golden State Warriors did use finger guns yesterday. It's also important to note the Warriors were not warned. Buddy Hield was warned. Ja Morant against the Miami Heat, basically like 4 minutes into the game, Ja hits a three and goes to his celebration, which he has done all year. I know it doesn't feel like he's done it all year, but he has done it all season. He then, I believe he hit it after every single three, but the television copy only caught two of the three threes. The NBA, or really I think I should say, Windhorse this morning on Get Up, I interpreted Brian Windhorst's comments on Get Up this morning as almost reporting. I think there were some people that interpreted it as a challenge to the NBA, as if Windhorst was personally affronted and saying, what is the NBA going to do about that? I did not interpret it this way. The way that I interpreted it was, Brian Windhorst is an extremely well-sourced person, and I kind of got the sense somebody either at the league office or privy to how the league office thinks basically said the league's upset about this, that they felt they were very clear in saying knock it off. Ja Morant personally defied them and that they were probably going to do something about it. I always thought it was going to be difficult to actually suspend him because there's no clear rule that you can say he should be suspended. The NFL has clearly taken a stance saying no gun celebrations. Even as George has pointed out, you're not even allowed to do the first down gun thing anymore. Like that gets hammered immediately. Penalty, fines, all of it. The NBA has not taken such a stance. I do think two things can be true. I think this was incredibly immature by Ja, only given the circumstances that his team was in. They are in the thick of a battle to stay out of the play-in. Time is of the essence. And we have clearly seen if this team does not have him, they're done. And I think it was immature to put yourself into a position, even if you think it is unjustified, to put your team at risk. I also think this might be truly the dumbest debate and the dumbest issue that I've ever seen the NBA take up. Because you literally have countless people throughout the league that are doing a gun celebration. For crying out loud, you just announced that Carmelo Anthony is going to be a first-time Hall of Famer, the man whose signature three-point celebration was threes to the head. Furthermore, I have this question. I know a lot of people don't realize, but Ja has played more than just this week. He has done this the entire season, and this did not ever become an issue until you played the Golden State Warriors, who I do truly believe both them and their fan base are the single biggest crybabies we've ever seen in sports. They're Charmin soft. They're super online. They're the worst of the worst. They're what makes me hate the NBA. Why all of a sudden was this not an, this was not an issue last week? He played on Saturday. This wasn't an issue on Saturday when they played the Lakers. This has only become an issue since playing the Warriors. And it also makes absolute zero sense to me to sit there and go, we are going to ignore that a large portion of the league does some form of celebration like this, and we're going to make an example out of Ja Morant when you've never stated that this is an issue that you want to take up. I do also think it's important to note we can act like past history shouldn't matter. It's a public, it is a business, and it is a televised business. Image does matter. All right, I get that. But this just feels like the NBA being just so unbelievably image conscious, so self-righteous, and acting like that they're always thinking about being on the right side of history, when in reality, all they've done is take a really stupid issue, bring it to the forefront, and honestly, take more conversation away from games. And to me, it's like, how's that good for business? Your business is literally basketball games.
I think there's a lot with this situation. And I'll start with what you kind of initially pointed out, which I think is fair, which is this has been something that he's been doing all year, and it wasn't really brought to light until there was a dust up on Tuesday where Morant and Hield both get technicals. They were not issued technicals because of the gun gestures. It was because they were jawing back and forth. And it feels like because that game was on TNT, right?
That the sixth, whatever for you, it would have been 4:30, but whatever, the 7:30 Eastern TNT game.
I'm rather convinced if that game is on regional television, we probably don't hear about it. It was a technical, we move on. But it was on TNT, it was on national television. It's towards the end of the season when there's going to be more eyeballs on it. Now you're incorporating another team, however you want to look at that. So I do think overall they are making an issue out of something that they did not seem to care about until now.
Yes.
However, there is a double standard with Ja Morant, and there probably should be because, and I know, I think it was Chris Vernon who put it out there today. I'm sure plenty of other folks down there in Memphis made note of Brandon Pajemski and LeBron and other players having the same celebration. The difference is those two players and others were not suspended multiple times by the NBA for having a gun on social media. So there is a double standard when it comes to Ja Morant, which I totally recognize. And then lastly, you and I are parents, and I know you're not to the point yet of this, but it's like telling your kid, don't do that, and then they immediately do it. And that's where I think the NBA, I felt like, and I'm glad they didn't suspend him because that would have been moronic. But he was told, hey, man, don't do this. He didn't get fined for Buddy Hield's situation. It was a public reprimand. And then he did it in the first quarter.
Yes.
So to me, I'm like, dude, you're kind of poking the bear. Like, what'd you expect? And then for him post-game to be like, look, I'm the villain, you know, you kind of played the woe is me card. It's like, I don't know, dude. You got suspended multiple times for showing a gun on social media. So there is a double standard, 100%, for Ja Morant by the NBA. Should this issue have become as big as it has become? I don't think so. And I think that point was validly stated by you. But then you did it again when you were told not to do it. And I think that's where, and to your point as well, like, it would have been dumb, but they could have suspended him. They probably, I mean, who knows with this league? I mean, with the NFL, you never know who's going to, if they're going to suspend you or do whatever. So it does feel like it's an overblown issue. I think that is fair. And I understand the frustration, I'm sure, from every listener tuning in right now that's a Grizzly fan. But I also think, too, there's a maturity factor where it's like, dude, they just said, you're not suspended, you're not fine, just don't do it again. And you did it in the first quarter after this whole thing became an issue. And what'd you expect them to do?
And I think you're 100% right, because I even said this when we were going through the Instagram Live situations. So I really believe, and I took some heat from this, I really believe Ja got suspended 25 games primarily because he got suspended 8 games. Adam Silver brought him into the office. He basically said, don't do this again. Ja goes and he did the weird Jalen Rose interview and was really kind of like mopey weird. Like, that was a weird end of the season. And then he gets caught, honestly, intoxicated, doing it again in a car with a friend. And I believe the 25-game suspension, which I think a lot of people pointed out, this is pretty stiff.
Yeah, I agree with that. I thought it was too much.
It was primarily because Adam Silver said, don't do this again, and he did. There's clearly ego involved, and I'm not denying that. But I really think that's kind of what happened here. If people want to know, like, this feels egregious to you, because I think Vernon pointed out also that Draymond got fined $25,000 for choking Rudy Gobert. I looked it up this week. Miles Turner and Trenton Watford, $35,000 for actually fighting on the floor. Like, I know everyone can do the whole, well, what about this? What about that? I really think what this whole thing boils down to is Adam Silver is very aware. He fights the narrative that he is a weak commissioner. And you chose yet again to publicly defy him. Do I think it is stupid you're being punished for this act? Yes, I do. Do I also think, as you pointed out, you provoked this? Yes, I do.
And once again, I just think we're at the point, too, where, and once again, I can't speak to Grizzly fans right now, and if you guys want to chime in and tell me I'm a complete moron, it wouldn't be the first time. But I think the point that you made to start this was, it's April 4th, last night was April 3rd. Oh, by the way, he hit the game-winning shot.
Yes.
In a very important game.
He had 27 in the second half. He was awesome.
Yeah, and it's like, that's, I know, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's a Ja Morant town, right? He's
yes.
the biggest star in your town.
Yes.
As he should be. He's a superstar, and he continues to be one. And it's like, do you want to just go full on, to get into your world a little bit, heel, and just be like, I'm the bad guy. I'm always going to be the bad guy. Or just don't figure out another celebration. Continue to ball out like you did last night in the second half. Get big wins. Get the hell out of the play-in, and then make a run, you know? And that's the thing, too, where it's like, I'm trying to think of a good example where, you know, I don't know, you do something at school, and you're like, this is so dumb, and everyone agrees. But the rules are what they are. And it's not fair, but it also is a little fair, because you put this on yourself with the multiple suspensions because of the Instagram Live stuff.
Yeah.
I totally am of the belief that if the Warriors and the Grizzlies played in the middle of December on regional television, probably don't hear anything about it. But because it was on TNT, we're about to hit the playoff run. I don't think they want that perception out there. And it was Ja Morant. And they just said, hey, don't do it again. There was no suspension. There was no fine. And we talked about it on the show yesterday. Just don't do it again. And it was right away. And it's like, well, what am I supposed to? It's, I don't know about you. Like, I've got a seven-year-old. And it's like, I'll say these things. Maybe it's something, you know, like, I'm going to take away, you know, movie on Saturday night. I don't really want to do that. Because guess what? When he watches a movie,
yeah, you
I
get to watch
hang out.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I got to go watch sports. But then he does another dumb thing. And I'm like, well, I could be weak and I could not take it away because I don't really want to. Or I could take it away and I guess we just have no movie on Saturday night. And I feel like that's kind of what happened, where it's like, did it have to be 75 grand? Could have been 50 grand? Could have been 25? I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, for these superstars and Ja, it's kind of monopoly money anyways. But they didn't suspend him. But I'd be curious, man, if he continues to do it, I don't know, man. It does feel like you keep poking and poking and poking. Eventually, Silver's going to be like, fine, you're suspended.
What I think, and George, you tell me if you think this is wrong. I think what is conflicting Grizzlies fans is Jaws. If everyone could have it their way, we would turn back the clocks to the 21-22 season. Jaws' first year, we make second team All-NBA. The Grizzlies set a league set a franchise record for wins. They finish in the two seed. They beat the Timberwolves, and then they take the Warriors to six games in the year that I think the Celtics took the Warriors to six games, but they were right there. And he played a very fun style, and there was the word that gets overused is it was joyous. Okay, if everyone could rewind the clocks back to that, everybody would vote for that. I just think everyone has come to the realization like that ship has sailed, and Ja is a very emotional player, and figuring out what gets his best is a little bit difficult. And I think what is conflicting everybody is I don't think everyone wants this to be the, all right, go play the villain, but it's like, man, if he does what he did in the second half the rest of the way, like all of a sudden there's a little bit of hope that this team might not just, you know, fall into the play-in, either miss the playoffs entirely or just unceremoniously exit in the first round. Like, this version of him gives the Grizzlies a chance. And so that's where everyone's kind of struggling with. It's like, all right, do we let him go down this path, like in this role, if that's what gets the best out of him? When in reality, like, no one, like, particularly likes this version of him. But I think that's kind of what everyone's going through. It's like, the basketball's been so crappy of late that if this is what inspires better play, everyone's just kind of like, all right, I'm fine with that. George, do you think that's fair or unfair?
I think for the most part, that's pretty fair, especially when we're talking about it in the context of the timing, what has happened with the Grizzlies season since the last 2 weeks, you know, and this is in the time frame of what Ja's been going through with the NBA. But at the same time, I don't think all of that is completely, like, it's not all mutually exclusive. Like,
yeah, no, I agree.
You know, we can all also say, hey, man, you probably should have done that. You should not have brought extra heat onto yourself. You can still play.
Pun intended.
Well, you know. You can play the way that you want to play, and you can go out there and have those type of interactions with other players on the court without potentially putting your availability on the line, which we haven't gotten to that point yet, but to Tim's point and to your point, we've seen Adam Silver not so much think with the rules, which for this, there isn't one, and that's, I think, another big part of the situation. There is nothing in the rule book that says you can't do this. It is purely, we think it makes us look bad, and you're disrespecting us by continuing to do it. So we don't like that.
And I would say, once again, to the reputation standpoint, think back to the 2016 NBA Finals. If someone who doesn't have the reputation of Draymond Green kicks LeBron and the fellas, they're probably not getting suspended. But it was Draymond Green who continues to poke the bear on that standpoint, too, of being a dirty player. And they were like, all right, dude, you're suspended in the NBA Finals.
Did he get suspended for the nut punch? I thought it was he had too many technicals.
I don't think that was I could be wrong. I thought it was because of the nut punch.
I'm also not totally sure whether it was the fisticuffs or if it was the techs. But to that point, there's at least a level of consistency there where they will be a lot harsher on repeat offenders in terms of like player safety. And
it was too many flagrant fouls. So
was a flagrant.
Yeah. So that was the it says he was suspended for game five.
Now I think
another flagrant.
I think it's also probably possible that that was the justification when in reality, like they're like, we know we got to suspend him, but we got to figure this. You know what I mean? Like if I recalled it was,
I don't think he can put a punched other player below the belt in a press release.
Yeah, I think that's it. All right. Does anybody else got anything else on this?
I was done with this yesterday.
Hell
honestly.
Of a win, man. Good win. It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate because of, and we talked about this yesterday. The NBA kind of thrives in this circle.
Yeah. Not
talking about games. Nobody talked about his game winner last night. And it's funny because I do this show in Milwaukee every morning, and Giannis did something that's never been done before, a 35-17-20 game. And the producer of that show is also the PA announcer. And he's like, you know, no one talks about Giannis. And I'm like, no one talks about Nikola Jokic, man. Like, Nikola Jokic is the best player on planet Earth. And all things considered, he's not that interesting. You know, he's not a good quote. He doesn't get in trouble. He just wants to play basketball and then, like, go ride his horse. Like, no one really talks about him all that much outside of
I think his brothers get more talk.
Right. He's not on Instagram, I don't think. I mean, I can't imagine he is. Like, he just goes and hoops, you know? So, I mean, that's kind of a weird thing. It is big picture to remove ourselves from Ja.
Yeah.
Because he's, you know, he's the hot topic right now. If we take a step back, the three best players in the world this year, in this season, it's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, it's Nikola Jokic, and it's Giannis. They're going to finish 1-2-3 in MVP. They are boring as hell.
Well, can I add a fourth?
Yeah, go for it.
Tatum.
Tatum, yeah. Like, Tatum's kind of unassuming, right? Like, doesn't really do much.
And Tatum's been like, he's been awesome this year.
It's been great. And look, if I'm the league, I'm puffing up LeBron and I'm puffing up Steph because they're doing something at the age that they're at that doesn't happen all that often. And they're generational superstars. But like Giannis, Jokic, SGA, to an extent Tatum, kind of boring. Not really all that interesting, right?
100% agree.
And it's like, and that was the thing too where, you know, Charles Barkley got all on his, you know, high horse there on TNT. But then a week later, Shaq is out there saying that he doesn't watch, like, the Cavaliers.
No, I mean, I told George this, like, the two professions that, like, I'm the most insanely jealous of are the people on inside the NBA and meteorologists. Because literally, it doesn't matter if you're right or wrong.
Some would argue.
I mean, I guess
sports gambling host.
I was gonna say, I guess, but like the thing about being a sports gambling host is, you do actually have a path where you can be wrong. If you're so wrong, like that's the thing. The worst thing you can do is go like somewhere between 49 and like 51%, because nobody's gonna make any money off you. Either go 60% or better. Or go like 35% or worse, because at least at that point, everybody can just fade you.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like at least like there's a path to success. But the problem is, like, if you just kind of win your coin flips every now and then, it's like you're not doing anyone any good.
Yeah, there is definitely an envy for meteorology. My buddy's a meteorologist here in town.
And I have great respect. Like, I understand you're literally trying to predict the weather, which is by definition unpredictable. Like,
I'll tell a quick story about my buddy, because I know you guys had pretty bad weather yesterday.
Oh,
right?
Boy. Ooh. The last 2 weeks, or the last 2 days have been tough.
So he was a meteorologist in Nashville for years. And now he's a meteorologist here in Vegas. And I was talking to him one day.
That's the biggest upgrade ever.
So I was talking to him one day, and, you know, you see the Jim Cantores of the world, these dudes that, and this is meant in the most highest respect ever. I mean, he kind of gets off to, like, chasing the big storm, right? That's who he is. I'm in the middle of the hurricane. And I'm talking to my buddy, and, you know, we're at the park. His kids are around my son's age. And I'm like, man, that's a big upgrade. I mean, like, that's a big change. He's like, dude, it's the best gig in the world. He's like, it's the same weather here every single day.
Yeah.
He's like, in Nashville, he's like, I used to be called in on Saturdays and Sundays for, like, tornado watch. Like, some meteorologists, I think, would love that. He's like, dude, I'm in my 40s. I got two kids. He's like, I'm good just saying the same damn thing. Hey, it's going to be 110 degrees. It's going to be windy today.
Well, like, and, like, that's the thing. Is like, because of our weather patterns, he's called in on, like, Saturdays and Sundays of the NCAA tournament when everyone's watching sports. And it's like, get off of my screen.
Right. Yeah.
We've got the internet. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. So, yeah. You were telling that story yesterday about your weather. And I was like, oh, yeah. I used to work in Memphis. And he was like, it sucked.
Yeah.
He was like, he is not, I don't want to call him not ambitious because he does his job and he works hard.
He's got a life.
But he's like, you know what? I don't need to be chasing. He's like, I'm good here. He's like, my wife's family's from here. And I asked him, I was like, oh, do you want to be the chief of meteorology? He's like, not really.
No, I'm good.
He's like, that just means more work. He's like, I do the morning work. I do the morning weather. I'm pretty happy with my gig. I was like, all right, man, good for you.
It's a good spot to be in. All right, we will turn our attention to the Final Four. We'll talk about it, of course, during the list. We'll also get into our cards during hour number two. But we'll also talk a little bit about it with Blake Topmeyer when he joins us next. We'll also get his thoughts on Ole Miss keeping Chris Beard, Texas A&M. Where are they going to go from here? We'll do all that next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
Blake Topmeyer is the senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. His podcast is SEC Football Unfiltered. Episodes drop each and every week. You can find them on all major podcast platforms. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at B Topmeyer. Blake, last Friday we were talking about, would Chris Beard leave Ole Miss for Texas A&M? Turns out, no. So I guess we got that one right.
We did, yeah. Feather in our caps. But it makes sense, right? Going back to our conversation last week, I don't know that this is a big enough step up, if at all. It feels like a really lateral move, and the only reason to do it, as we discussed last week, would be to try to drive the knife into Texas's back. But that's not a real great way to make career decisions, and apparently Chris Beard felt the same way.
What do you think this says about Ole Miss now, that if you look at it in the last 2 years, Lane Kiffin, like Auburn came after Lane Kiffin hard, and they didn't land him, and Ole Miss starves off, you know, they put the Heisman on Texas A&M, and they're able to keep Chris Beard. What do you think it says about Ole Miss and maybe kind of the landscape of college athletics today?
Yeah, I think it says that NIL, by and large, has been good for Ole Miss. If you're dividing people into two camps, real black and white lines, which is dangerous to do, but if you're doing that and dividing it into either you're a winner or a loser from the NIL revolution, Ole Miss decisively goes in the winner's column. And so, you know, things like historical track record are not nearly as relevant anymore as they were even 5-10 years ago. Things like facilities aren't as relevant as they were 5-10 years ago. NIL drives the bus now, as we know, and I think Ole Miss in both the football and basketball lanes has been able to land a punch there. I mean, I do think, you know, on the football front, it was a unique set of circumstances. I'm not saying Lane stayed entirely for his eldest daughter who was enrolling at Ole Miss, but I do think family factored into his decision. But I think also Lane saw what Ole Miss was doing on the NIL front and thought, like, just because historically Auburn is a better job than Ole Miss football doesn't mean right now in this moment it was a better job. And I think he's proved correct in that. And I think, you know, in Chris Beard's case, similar situation. Like, you know, in every angle, I don't know that Texas A&M is as much, if at all, an upside as compared to Ole Miss. And I think that's a credit, again, to NIL has been good for Ole Miss. I think that donor base sees if you've got a coach that they believe they can win with, they'll open up the pocketbooks a little bit.
Blake, so now what does Texas A&M do, in your opinion? It is
– or should they do?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think right now. That is really the only main job, and it could start the carousel back up. But what does Texas A&M do? As we know, they've got the money, but they right now don't have a coach.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's obvious answers there. It's a situation where that job is good because it's in the SEC, and the SEC is a league on the way up. Well, I mean, it is up, not just on the way up. It is up in college basketball. But I think, you know, Buzz Williams leaving for Maryland sort of shows you kind of where Texas A&M is still in the SEC pecking order. It is not a top shelf job. It's sort of middle of the pack, you know, and how much does that move the needle? I think it moves the needle a lot with mid-major coaches who are maybe looking to get back to the Power Five. As far as Power Five coaches that have a good job, such as Chris Beard, doesn't even have to be a great job. Good job, but not a great job. I don't think Texas A&M moves the needle enough to jump. I mean, I know we've seen some headlines with Chris Mack, who had previously coached Louisville, coached Xavier to success. Xavier reached the Elite Eight and a couple Sweet 16s, a few Sweet 16s really with Chris Mack, and now after it didn't work out for him at Louisville, he had a good season at Charleston. So I mean, he's a name I've seen in the headlines, and someone like that, I think would make sense for them. You know, someone who has some experience on the big stage, didn't work out for him, but they've kind of rehabbed, you know, just enough at the mid-major that maybe you give it a second go for him. You know, I mean, I could see the hesitance there, because if it didn't work at Louisville, why would it work at Texas A&M? But it did work for him at Xavier. So overall, throughout the course of his career, he's been a pretty good coach. And if you're Texas A&M and you swing and miss on your A-list options like Chris Beard, maybe that is your reality now, is that you have to reach down into the mid-major ranks.
Do you put any stock into, you know, I feel like you occasionally hear, like when I've been digging on coaching searches, that Todd Golden was really upset with how Florida handled his investigation and feels like he was left out in the cold, and don't be surprised if he looks for another landing spot. Do you put any stock into that at all?
I mean, I guess you never know what someone personally feels. I mean, for me, yeah, I kind of compare this question to last week when we were talking about Chris Beard. Like, yeah. I don't know what the individual thinks. I know for me, taking the Texas A&M job just to try to drive the knife into Texas didn't make much sense. And so if I'm Todd Golden and I think I don't love the way Florida handled this situation, well, you know, the actions of Florida's Title IX department, you know, how they led the investigation, to me, you shouldn't base career decisions based on how the Title IX department at your university acted. And by the way, like from where I sit, I don't know if there's any evidence that the Florida's Title IX department did act inappropriately, right?
Right.
I mean, there were allegations that they had to investigate, that's what they're required to do. They investigated him. You know, their investigation did not find evidence to move forward. And so here we are. And so, you know, if Todd Golden is chapped by that, then I guess he can look for another gig. But I would say, you know, in terms of his career, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Like if you're basing job decisions, leaving a school that you've proven you can get to the Final Four at, I think Florida has shown, you know, at least from, you know, NIL front, the athletic department front, that they'll show some support in Todd Golden. I mean, heck, he wasn't suspended during any of that. So if he views it as a lens of like Florida didn't support me, I think you can make a strong claim the other way of like, well, Florida's athletic department did support him, because you could have suspended him until the investigation in the Title IX office played out. Florida Athletics didn't do that. They let him keep coaching until the investigation played out, and it played out in his favor. And so, yeah, I mean, on the individual level, I guess if he's chapped by that, then sure, he can look to get out of there. But, you know, for me, looking at it kind of from the outside end, I would say, like, you can make just as much of an argument that Florida did stand by him, at least on the athletic department front, in the fact that they didn't suspend him.
All right, let's look ahead to tomorrow. We do have two SEC teams in the Final Four, Florida and Auburn. Where are we on the health for Jonnae Broome? I know he's told people he's fine. Do you believe him? Do you think he is unhindered? Do you think he's got some, you know, magic juice in the veins in the first half, Blake? What are we thinking about the health of Broome tomorrow?
You can always put magic juice in the veins.
That is true.
That is true.
Heard.
I thought it was encouraging he came back after the injury in the Elite Eight game. Now, I will say, like,
he was playing one arm
player. Yeah, he was playing with one arm after he came back with the injury. So it's like, awesome, he came back, great, he hit the three. I don't know that I expect him to be 100% based on what I saw of him coming back. Like, I think he is going to play. To me, I don't, you know, what would have changed from him coming back in the second half to now that would cause him not to play? That to me seems unlikely. But is he going to be firing at 100%? I tend to think no. I mean, to me, he looked like he'd been kind of worn down to this point in the season anyway, until he comes out with an incredible first half against Michigan State and plays a way that we hadn't really seen him play in a few games. So, I don't think he's at 100%. I don't know that he was 100% even before this. I would say whatever percent he was before, he's probably less than that now. But given the fact that he just keeps trotting out there throughout this season, like, yeah, I think he's going to be out there. I think if he's not 100%, which I feel like he's probably not going to be, That even stacks the deck a little bit more in Florida's favor. I think if I were handicapping the odds at this point, and the sports books feel the same way, I think Auburn is the longest shot odds to win the national championship at this point. I don't know that that would qualify as a shocking result if Auburn wins at all. Like, you know, when you've had some of these 11 seeds run to the Final Four, first four to Final Four, I think if one of those teams would have won the national championship, that would have qualified as a shocking result. I don't think it goes down as shocking if Auburn wins at all, but I do think in the totality of the circumstances, the way they've played, the way Broome, you know, he might be still playing with an injury here. He didn't look 100% entirely before. To me, they are rightfully the longest shot odds to win the national championship.
Do you think it could be an advantage, though, for Auburn? I mean, they've spent much of this year. I mean, we talked about it when they basically locked up the number one seed with like 3 weeks left in the season. And now I think they can actually legitimately kind of play the underdog role. Do you think that could work in their favor?
I think that could. You know, I don't think it's not an advantage to have Broome playing at less than 100%, but the mentality of it, I do think that Bruce Pearl has his team playing with the mentality of an underdog with the talent level of a Final Four team. And that is a dangerous combination. And he was able to sort of sow that narrative really going into the second round. And I don't think he was like totally out of left field creating that narrative either. Like some people would say, like, really, Bruce, are we supposed to believe this, that you're an underdog? But no, I mean, I thought that was an effective line to take because, you know, the committee did give them what we all felt like, I think, was a tough draw in their region. You know, and then he plays the card going up against Michigan State of, oh, look how great Tom Izzo is in March and we're the underdog. You know, I mean, it's like kind of like a wink, wink, but it's not totally outrageous either. Like you can get, I mean, coaches have gotten players to believe far dumber narratives to convince Kirby them they're the underdog, right?
Yeah, don't forget about Kirby. What when
they were going to be 6-6 or something?
Dog hater 69 said that they were going to be a 7-5 team.
Exactly. Like, yeah, coaches and Kirby Smart among them have gotten their guys to believe dumber narratives and convince them that they're the underdog. This is not a silly narrative at this point that Auburn is the underdog, despite the number one overall seed. Like if we were reseeding the tournament right now, with these four teams left, Auburn would be the four seed, and they'd be playing number one seeded Duke in the Final Four. That's the reality of if we were reseeding. So, yeah, I mean, I think they are an underdog. I think Bruce Pearl is right to play that narrative, particularly with this roster. Like, this is a roster of guys that are transfers that played at mid-majors, in the case of Janiah Broome, starting his career at Morehead State, or played at a Division II, or played at a JUCO. This is not a roster of McDonald's All-Americans. And so I think you can really effectively play that narrative. You can't play that narrative if you're Duke, right? I mean, not only would a reseed have them number one, but like you're talking about guys who were blue chip prospects. Playing the underdog card with Duke would make no sense, and those guys wouldn't buy that. At Auburn, I think those guys do buy that narrative, and I think it can be powerful.
Maybe I'm being a bit of a hater here, but are we just kind of giving Florida a pass a little bit? Because, you know, it was funny. I was just texting with a buddy of mine who looked at Auburn and was like, yeah, you know, they haven't been playing well. I'm like, okay, I mean, I could hear you on that. You know, you kind of sleepwalk in the first round. You look, you know, kind of sluggish against Creighton in the first half. Woke up in the second half, sluggish.
Really, for 30 minutes. It was like the last 10 minutes that they kind of woke up.
But I look at Florida, and I'm like, you're on the ropes with UConn, and they had some open looks. They don't go down. You're down 9 with 3 minutes to go against Texas Tech. Look, a team that, if healthy, I think is probably a top 5 team in the country. But it does feel like to me, and maybe I'm crazy, we're giving Florida a little bit too much of a pass when they have, you know, struggled, you know, point spread wise, they're 1-3 against the spread. They were life and death against Texas Tech, down against UConn. Are we giving Florida a little bit of a pass because of how great they looked at the end of the season?
I think people are a smidge quick to pencil them in as the winner in this game. But I think the reason why is because Florida's star is playing as well as anybody in the tournament. And we build narratives based around stars, right? Like even though that was a very too close for comfort victory against UConn, same way against Texas Tech, Walter Clayton played phenomenal in those games, particularly in the clutch. He's the reason why they beat UConn. He's a big reason why they beat Texas Tech. And I think that builds the narrative of, oh boy, look out for Florida because they have this senior guard. And I don't think that's, you know, totally off base, by the way. Like we've seen it over the last decade. Teams with veteran guards who are playing at their best are really dangerous in this tournament, and it's why Florida still stands today because of the way Walter Clayton is playing. But I think because he's played so well and because Broom, Auburn's star, was a little bit rocky road until the Michigan State game, and then he played great against Michigan State, but he suffers an injury, and maybe he's not 100%. And he played pretty well against Michigan, too, but he got off to a rough start in this tournament, was not great against Creighton, struggled from the floor. I think you look at that situation, one team stars playing as well as he ever has and was Mr. Clutch in those wins against UConn and Texas Tech. And then you have Broom, who got off to a slow start in this tournament. When you combine that with the way they finished the season, your star got off to a slow start in the tournament. Now he's injured. Like I feel like that kind of cast the die on the narrative, even though that probably is overdoing it a little bit, because to your point, Florida's been pushed to the brink. But I think that's a big reason why that narrative is formed, is because the spotlight focuses on the stars in this tournament, and I don't think there's been a bigger star than Walter Clayton.
It is kind of amazing how he hits those big shots against UConn, and like they were just absolute daggers. But I really think it's like it comes down to it in the Elite Eight game. I think that's the coolest play I've ever seen in the NCAA tournament, when he was casually going into the lane down two and thinking, I'm going to take this layup. Nah, that's only worth two. I'm going to back up and take the lead and then cans it. Like, I honestly think that's like one of the coolest plays I've ever seen, because he was just so casual. Like, he was so casual about it.
It was awesome. Like, if you asked me to name one play from this tournament,
yes,
that's the first one I'm naming. And if they win the national championship, even though that play didn't happen in the title game, I think that, you know, unless something crazy happens in the next two rounds,
right,
that will be the play that is remembered because of when it happened. You're right, they're down two with about a minute to go. He has a five-footer in the paint. Would have been a contested five-footer, but it's a five-footer in the paint. And he just, like you said, he casually says, nah, I think I'll pass. It's worth 2 points here. It's worth 3 points out there from 20 feet, 3 feet away. And so he just takes three dribbles, and no one really jumps out to stop him.
It's like they couldn't believe what he was doing.
Exactly. Yeah, why did this guy not just take the five-footer? He's like, well, there's an extra point out here. And then he just drills the three, puts him up one with a minute to go, and from there we know the rest of the story. Like, yeah, I think, again, like, these tournaments are about narratives, right? And that just sort of created part of this narrative around Florida. He's already playing great anyway. He hits the biggest shot of the tournament in this a little bit strange play that the analytics nerds, I'm sure, loved. But it's like, human nature is not to pass up the five-footer that would have tied the game and say, I'm going to dribble 18 feet in the opposite direction and shoot it out here from three. But, like, I think he just, like, randomly wandered out to the arc and is just like, oh, I'm open, I'll shoot it. Like, I think that was kind of his plan all along, right? Like, he seemed to be headed out there with a purpose. Like, I think I'm just going to back up here and shoot the three. Yeah, I mean, if they win it all, Walter Clayton's going to be the story of this tournament, and that play will be one of the lasting images.
Blake, how would you rank the coaches that you trust heading into the Final Four?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think all these guys are strong coaches. I do put Kelvin Sampson on the top perch, and maybe that's
I do too.
I think we're three for three.
Yeah, maybe that's because we just saw him design this brilliant inbounds play to result in the game-winning bucket against Purdue. And I know, look, I mean, Kelvin Sampson's 0-2 in Final Four games, but this is his third time on this stage. He's consistently got Houston to the Sweet 16, you know, or beyond, year after year now. I just think he's a great coach. And I don't really see it as a knock on him that he hasn't won a national championship. I see it as a credit to him that he's now been to the Final Four three times. It's very rare that he has an absolute bust of a tournament. Like I said, he's kind of a Sweet 16 machine, particularly in his Houston tenure. And, you know, I can't remember if we talked about this or I just wrote about it, but coming into the tournament, I did my Mount Rushmore of best active coaches without a national championship. And, you know, I think about Mount Rushmore as, like, you got your two guys in the middle who it's like, these guys are non-negotiables. These are on my Mount Rushmore. And then you got your two guys kind of on the flanks, right? My two guys in the middle of non-negotiable best active coaches without a national championship were Mark Few and Kelvin Sampson. Mark Few, what he's done at Gonzaga, speaks for itself. He's got two national runner-ups. He's turned that from a Cinderella into basically an elite program operating from a mid-major conference. But the other guy in the center of that Mount Rushmore of active coaches without a title was Kelvin Sampson. To me, he was non-negotiable in that conversation, and I still think he is. The only thing is he might work his way off that Mount Rushmore by getting a ring in the next few days here. So, yeah, I think he's on the top perch. The other three guys maybe are all about the same to me. I think Pearl's probably the best motivator of the group. I think Todd Golden and John Shire obviously have proven themselves to be really strong coaches. Shire, like, he's made replacing a legend look easy. I know Duke has a lot of advantages. Sure, absolutely. But we all know that, you know, there is great difficulty in replacing a legend, and he's made it look so smooth. So I don't think there's a weak link in San Antonio as far as coaches, but I do put Kelvin Sampson just a smidge above the rest. Doesn't mean that they're going to win that semifinal game, but I think he falls into the asset category for them as they prepare for Duke.
Who'd you have as your other two?
My other two on the flanks were Bruce Pearl and Rick Barnes. Barnes, not through the lens of the NCAA tournament. It wasn't a Mount Rushmore of NCAA tournament guys.
His teams never suck.
Yeah, his teams never suck. He's a great program builder. He's always going to have you in the tournament. Dana Altman was kind of on the outside of my looking in. And to be clear, like, I did sort of look at it as a kind of a career achievement. Like, it wasn't so much a list of, like, in this very moment right now, because I think Nate Oates would have a strong case of being on that list right now in terms of just best active coaches in this moment that haven't been to that haven't won a national championship. But yeah, I mean, I was kind of looking at it more through the lens of needed somebody that had been around the block a little bit to be considered. And so those were my four guys. My two central figures were Mark Few and Kelvin Sampson in the middle. And then Bruce Pearl would have been my number three, and last man onto Mount Rushmore would have been Rick Barnes. If one of those guys wins it, and I would need to insert someone new on that list, I think it might be Dana Altman. He's had obviously a great career, been to a Final Four, was excellent at Creighton in building that program. And then, you know, is a consistent winner at Oregon, but he doesn't have the national championship ring. And he has a very similar resume, I think, to Rick Barnes, in that, like, he wins every year. He's going to get you in the tournament nearly every year. Most years he's not going to get you to a Final Four. Both Altman and Barnes only have one Final Four, despite their great winning percentage and consistently being in the tournament.
All right, we'll get you out of here on this. Who you got this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, the easy thing would be to say Duke, but if you guys recall before the tournament,
I was going
to
see if you're going to, are you sticking with it?
You've been
the Houston rider all tournament long.
Yeah, I picked Houston over Florida on Selection Sunday. I am sticking with that. If I were to switch it, I might be tempted to go like Florida over Duke. The only team that I'm not really tempted to pick would.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Alma said, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Alma said it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Alma said with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. but that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.